The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, for those of you who came in after I introduced myself, I'm Hillary, and I'm here subbing for Diana, and welcome, everyone. It's really sweet to be here. Is the sound okay? Okay, and thank you. I noticed that people were starting to getting a little cool. So, Jim, I think you came in just the right time to turn down the air conditioning. So I'm going to put my spectacles on so I can see something. So tonight, I want to talk about what I like to call the window of well-being. Has anybody heard of the window of well-being before? Okay. So in this world of many distractions, our practice brings us home to our being. We learn to sit still and turn our awareness inward and find out what wants to be known. Can we learn to be present for whatever arises and just make space for it without grasping on to thoughts or pushing away feelings? So when I first started meditating, I think it was 22 years ago, maybe 23 by now, I had a hard time being with all the thoughts buzzing around in my head. Does anybody have that problem? Right. And I had this wrong idea about how meditation was going to stop my thoughts. Has anybody thought that too? Okay, I'm going to just stop thinking, right? And then it's like, oh, wait a minute. I got that wrong. But I began to get more still and quiet, and meditating for a while didn't feel calming. You know, it felt more like being in a popcorn machine. Pop, 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 all these thoughts. And my mind was like making these kernels of popcorn so that I could project my thoughts onto the screen in my mind, you know, about narrating my life, right? What happened before, what's going to happen in the future, right? So, but over time, the practice began to settle, and I learned to make space for the thoughts without latching onto them and adding onto them. I used to think of these, the train station, you know, and a thought would come to the train station and then just let it go. But inevitably, another train would get attached to that one, and then another one. Pretty soon, I had all kinds of, you know, a very long train full of cars that was heading out of the station. And it was just always just noticing when I noticed that was happening, and then just bringing awareness back, back to this present moment right now. So after a while, I began to look forward to meditating. I used to think of this as a spa for my mind, you know, a little spa time. And the thoughts began just to settle into the background, and my awareness was more in the foreground, and my anxiety lessened. Is anybody feeling that sense of calm in your practice? Some, and some maybe not. So, until one day, and this is about a year into my practice, when I least expected it, these long buried experiences and emotions began to bubble up. And I would not say bubble up. They begin to blob up like a volcanic eruption. And I was taken by surprise. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be sitting here being calm. What is this? So nobody told me that this could happen, right? When we get quiet, the parts of ourselves that we've repressed, we've turned away from, we've ignored, may come knocking, right? Wanting our attention. Because now they're like, oh, you're quiet, right? You seem peaceful, right? Now I can come and you can attend to me. So Michael Stone at this Well of Light is just a website I found it. He says, when something in our lives was too overwhelming to feel, too much, too fast, too soon, the nervous system adapted. Over hundreds of thousands of years, this intelligence has evolved to protect us. It learned to numb, distance, defend, and absence, to take us out of immediate experience when it was unsafe to stay. These were not mistakes, they were acts of survival. But over time, these strategies become patterns, and those patterns become identity, not as who we truly are, but as the lens through which we see the world and create our reality. So this conditioning that we talk about in our mindfulness practice, these long-held patterns of ignoring, suppressing, you know, running away from thoughts, feelings, sensations, can keep us in reactivity. We're either pushing away what feels uncomfortable, or we're getting sucked into them like a black hole. So learning to turn towards what is present without aversion or clinging is a central practice of mindfulness. And this requires the cultivation of equanimity. So in Buddhism, equanimity is considered one of the most sublime of the Brahma Viharas, the four divine abodes. The first is metta, loving kindness. The second is mudita, which is the joy of the happiness of others. The third is karuna, compassion. And the fourth is upekkha, equanimity. It is a way of being with what is without grasping or pushing away. So there's another Pali word for equanimity I just discovered, and I'm probably going to mispronounce it. It's tatra maja tata, which means to stand in the middle of. So kind of like I think of the eye of the hurricane, right? It's all very, it's very calm in the center, you know, it's all the storms are whirling around. Inside, standing in the middle of, there's some calm. So in somatic therapies, standing in the middle is known as the window of tolerance. Has anybody heard of that before? Yeah, so some of you, yeah. But I think tolerance isn't the best word. It kind of has this connotation of bearing up under something and a kind of bracing, whereas equanimity is more of an openness to what is. So there's this analogy of life being like a rope, right, that is passing through our hands. If you try to grab onto it, you're going to get rope burn. If you hold it like this and the rope goes passing through your hands, you won't get those blisters, right? So I like to think of equanimity, instead of as a window of tolerance, I like to think of it as the window of well-being, which is nice because the acronym is WOW. It's the middle way between hyperarousal, such as anxiety and anger, and hypoarousal, such as numbness and depression. So But it's not a steady state, right? It's not a flat line, this window of well-being, right? Because that would feel really stagnant, right? If we were just kind of like everything is just okay and I'm not troubled by anything, I might not actually feel any kind of joy or happiness either, right? So, you know, this can happen in our window of well-being if it becomes too constricted because we're being too avoidant, right, of what is. Instead, equanimity is a range of being, right, a waving line of ups and downs, going with the flow. So the question for us is, how can we widen this window of well-being so that minor frustrations, disappointments, grief doesn't bump us out of this equanimity? Because when we feel overwhelmed, these gentle waves can become these towering peaks and deep valleys, right? We can get triggered into this hyperactivation of anxiety or anger. And when this stress becomes too much, it's like a circuit breaker, right? When we're been at too high level of stress, the circuit breaker flips and our nervous system can then descend down into feeling of hypoarousal, and in which we feel numb, checked out, dissociated, right? So I have this handy dandy little picture here. So this is equanimity in the middle. And as you can see, it's a nice wide range, right? And there's this ups and downs of everyday life. If we get bummed out of this, we end up in anxiety, and then we're in anxiety too long, and we crash down through equanimity into hypoarousal, into dissociation, numbness, sometimes depression. So how do we widen this window of equanimity? And when we are bummed out of it, because we will be, right? We will be. How do we come back to center? How do we turn back to that window? So first, I would like to explore this idea of equanimity. What are the qualities of being equanimous? So I like the 8 C's of IFS, internal family systems. Is anybody familiar with that? Few people. So just close your eyes for a moment, and I'm going to read the 8 C's, and I want you just to feel how they land in your body, in your being. Curiosity. Calm. Clarity. Compassion, confidence, courage, creativity, connectedness. And you can open your eyes again. Just curious, just by reading some of these qualities that we might attribute to equanimity, do people feel a little more equanimity, a little more equanimous? Some people no, some people yes. So I'm just curious, are there qualities that you might add to this list? Something that is more, that feels more like equanimity for you. Is there anybody who wants to share? Is there something else that might be another word you might like to add to this list? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
For me, I would say open,
open and porous. Nice.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Just being okay is okay. It's nice. That's really a good place to be. Yes.
Dispassion.
Dispassion. Yes. We're going to talk a little bit about that as we go forward. Thank you. Anybody else?
Trusting.
Balance, trusting. Yeah, these are all wonderful qualities of equanimity. And then, you know, we talk about causes and conditions in Buddhism. What are the causes and conditions that help us to be equanimous? Anybody want to share anything? Obviously, meditating is one of them. What helps you to be equanimous?
Seeing the impermanence of things and you can't really hold on to either of the sides of Buddhism.
Right, seeing impermanence, not holding on. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say non-attachment.
Non-attachment, Yeah, that's that not clinging, not pushing away, right? It's being in the middle of, yeah. There are things that we can engage in too that can be helpful in helping us to be equanimous. I know that I went through a really traumatic experience, and my nervous system was extremely hypervigilant, and I was finding it difficult to meditate. And I found that when I would walk in a garden, a beautiful garden, my nervous system would power down. I would go to an art gallery and see beautiful paintings again. My nervous system would power down, or listening to calming music. When we are feeling overwhelmed and we go to sit and it feels too much, it's also really helpful to be able to have some external resources until we can make our way back to our meditation. So now let's have a feel for equanimity. Let's practice with not being equanimous. No, I know you probably didn't. Does anybody have some aversion to that right now? you know, what happens to us when there is some kind of a stimulus and we get reactive, right? Maybe we get anxious. A wave of emotion comes. That's the first step. And then we may feel agitated that we have this feeling. I mean, how many of us have thought to ourselves, I'm anxious. Oh no, I'm anxious and I'm anxious, right? You start layering. We talk about the first arrow in Buddhism, and then you add the second and the third, and it makes it worse. So this magnifies the emotion and perhaps bumps us out of that window of well-being into hyper or hypoarousal. So the most important aspect of equanimity is not to become blended with an emotion. So some people have said non-attachment or another description of this not becoming blended with an emotion. In mindfulness, we would call being blended over-identification, right? So we typically might say, I am anxious, right? So you hear the I am quality of that, the words that we use, right? That connotes that, oh, we're blended, right? There's no space between our awareness and that anxiety, right? We are the anxiety. And so it might feel like that feeling is taking over our bodies. So let's just practice with getting a little reactive and then returning to the window of well-being. So you might want to just close your eyes or have a soft gaze and just first taking a slightly deeper breath in and out. And then tuning into awareness. Right? And in Hakomi training, there's this idea of sitting in your back body. And so your awareness is not in the forefront. You're not leaning into it, but your awareness is sitting back. Right? Just being aware of what is present in this moment. So noticing, what are you aware of? Is there a thought or a feeling or a sensation that wants your attention? If it's a thought, you might hear the thought in your mind. But your awareness is the one who is listening. The awareness is not the thought. It is the one who is listening. Do you notice any kind of constriction maybe in your body? Or any kind of discomfort? Or maybe a strong emotion? So your awareness is the one that is noticing. Perhaps noticing where that is in your body. And then being able to name it, giving it a name. So if you feel some anxiety, you might say, I am anxious. But noticing that I am-ness, I am anxious, or I am sad. And then to create a little more space between your awareness and the feeling, you might say, I feel. I feel anxiety. Right? So going from I am to I feel. And then stepping back a little more, you might say, I am aware that I feel anxiety. I am aware that I feel whatever it is that you're noticing. And then stepping back just a little bit more and saying, I'm aware that a part of me feels anxiety. And dropping the I am altogether and stepping back yet a little bit more, and anxiety is present. Do you see how there's more space now? Because there's no more of the I am-ness, right? There's not this blendedness with whatever you're feeling. It is present here. It's not all of you, right? And you might take slower, deeper breaths. feeling your sit bones in your seat, feeling your feet on the ground, and bringing a little self-compassion to whatever you're feeling. And if there's some discomfort, you might place a hand on that part of you that feels constricted. Perhaps saying something comforting, I'm here, I feel you, I see you, I care. And if it feels like too much to be with whatever is present, you can always open your eyes and look around and find something pleasant that feels nourishing. And if what you're trying to be with still feels too much, you can always move a little, get up, get a drink of water, take a walk. But before you leave whatever you have that has come for your attention, saying, I'm sorry I can't be with you right now, but I'll be back. When I feel a little more settled, I'll be back for you. And so the feeling, the sensation, whatever is causing constriction begins to trust you. As you begin to feel less afraid of being with what is, your feelings, your thoughts, your sensations will be less afraid of you, and you'll be able to befriend whatever arises. So if you would like to, you can open your eyes or continue to have them closed, whatever feels right for you. Did anybody feel any kind of beginning of a separation, more of a separation? Yeah. So when we say things like, I am afraid, I am angry, I am sad, we are so blended, right? There's no space for equanimity. You know, to open up into equanimity. And so when we begin to create some space, so the awareness is aware of, oh, this is present, right? Not I am, but, oh, sadness is here. I see you. So one of the fundamental teachings of Buddhism is that change is the only thing that is certain. You spoke of impermanence, right? However, most of us are afraid of change. Is anybody afraid of change? I know. Unless things are really bad. If I'm sitting in the dentist's office and he's drilling my teeth, I really am into change, right? Things are bad, we want them to change. But mostly we want security, right? We want certainty. But the truth is that everything changes, including our thoughts and our feelings, right? And because we're not able to let them come and go, right, in that gentle wave going with the flow, we often get stuck in them and they become more solidified, right? They become an identity. So language can reinforce this. In the English language, evidently, we have more nouns than verbs. People, places, things, right? We think this is the way things are, solid and unchanging, right? They're nouns. However, this is a view that we see life through, right? In some other languages, there's a different way of perceiving the world. A world of verbs instead of nouns. So Robin Wall Kimmerer, does anybody know her? She's wonderful. She is a professor of biology. I think she studies, but she is a Native American woman who's also grew up in her Native American Potawatomi language, where everything is living and alive. Plants, animals, rocks, soil, water, air, sky, earth, all changing, all engaged in a never-ending process of becoming, right? We are human beings. We are always changing from moment to moment, like our cells are being replaced, right? Our thoughts are coming and going. Our emotions are coming and going. I was listening to a podcast recently on SAND, the Science and Non-Duality. And there was a Native American elder and psychologist, Eduardo Duran, who was speaking about the soul wound. And he explained that the traditional indigenous view is that everything is a subject, right? Instead of being in an inanimate object, everything is a subject. Everything is a verb. So when one of his clients comes to him and says, "I am depressed," he says, "Depression is visiting you. What does it have to say?" Huh, what an idea, right? Instead of saying I'm anxious, we might say anxiety is visiting, right? Hello, what do you have to tell me? So there's this, I'm sure everyone has heard this lovely Sufi poem by Rumi, The Guest House. "This being is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond." Now, I have to say, meeting all of these strong emotions that we may have at the door laughing is a little it's a little high bar, but can we meet them with some open-heartedness? Pema Chodron said, "Many people think the goal of spirituality is to get to the place where there is only light, but that is not freedom. Freedom is being able to stand in the pitch black and the blinding light with the same open heart." What an aspiration, right? I mean, we're all going through individually, collectively, some darkness, right? And it can be very destabilizing, unsettling. So there's this article by Margaret Cullen in Tricycle Magazine, "Seeing with Grandmother's Eyes." Does anybody have or did have a grandmother who was sweet and kind, or grandfather, someone who was kindly like a grandmother, grandfather? I hope so. In Buddhist teaching, she says, a metaphor that is often used for equanimity is grandmotherly love. Whether it is seeing with a grandmother's eyes or relating through grandmother's heart, the grandmother is able to love fully without being caught in the dramas of her grandchildren's lives. She doesn't take things personally and sees all children as deserving of love and care. A grandmother's eyes are quiet eyes. They neither seek to possess nor disown. Her gaze epitomizes unconditional goodwill. So can we see our thoughts, our feelings, our sensations through the eyes of a grandmother, grandfather, with unconditional goodwill, right? And it's only seeing with these kindly eyes the comings and goings of our thoughts and sensations, of our relationships, of our careers, our youth, everything else that is changing. It's only then that we will be able to live with equanimity in this window of well-being. So I just want to end with a couple of these quotes. There's a teacher and author, Suzanne Anderson, who says, "This moment we are living in isn't inviting us to escape what is difficult or uncertain. It's not asking us to rise above the darkness or transcend it. It's asking us to stay, to become more deeply rooted, more fully present, more intimately embodied in the very terrain we once tried to leave. When we are willing to meet the shadow, not as something to get rid of, but as a part of ourselves to understand and integrate, something begins to unlock. Energy that has been bound up in old patterns becomes available. Perception widens. We develop the capacity to hold more complexity without collapsing. We become less driven by unconscious fear and more guided by an inner coherence that can meet what is actually here." So may we cultivate equanimity in our practice as we learn to widen and live in this window of well-being, letting these thoughts and feelings and sensations move through us, and softening the heart and soil of these paths, this past conditioning, and seeing our experience through kind eyes. So I hope that something has been helpful for you and your practice. We'll have about 10 minutes now of just reflection, and if you would like to ask questions or any comments, feel free to do that now. Yes.
Thank you for the expansion of the well into a tolerance.
Oh. Hang on a second. And that, I was just saying, thank you for the expansion of that definition, because I've been working with that with the somatic counselor, and it's really helpful. But tolerance is the word. It's an interesting word, because it's almost like, it's not that it's anxiety or anything. It's just that you have to kind of put up with, you know, I like to think of it as like you're opening this window and you're becoming more tolerant. But well-being is even better. So thank you for that. As we were meditating, I really noticed something which was dread. Like when I was dropping into the meditation, I noticed that I had this dread. And that was a really interesting, I kind of recognized it, and it was tears. I was sad. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like visiting. It was more like, I got to feel this, you know, like I'm sitting there going like, I'm dreading feeling it. I'm not letting myself feel it. But in the meditation, I felt it. And, you know, I was crying. And so it was kind of like I really made a connection between the dread and the fact that that was telling me something. It was like the visitor saying, you know, you really should go into this. And usually if you're walking around or whatever, you're not really there to be able to drop in. Right. But the meditation allowed me to do that. So I just wanted to – it was a very – it made more sense after you talked about it, what I was experiencing.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much. Right, the dread, and the dread, usually we feel that and we run away, right? That, and it can be confusing sometimes, right? Because the dread, it can feel like that's, my body's telling me something, right? I need to run away now, right? It triggers that fight, flight. And so turning towards what is arising, it can feel so frightening, right? What's going to happen? What do I do then? And so I think it's really important to have some sort of some steps that one takes in understanding why it's beneficial, right? Why is it beneficial to turn towards those feelings? Because the thing is that we've probably, I know, I came to this practice I think I was probably in my mid-40s, and I had spent decades running away with dread from the things I did not want to be with. And it did not make them go away, right? They're still in there. And they're still wanting, needing for some attention, some comfort, right? Can we be with them? Can they trust us to be with them? And we don't do that all at once, right? We don't go, okay, I'm going to dive into the middle of my worst trauma and I'm going to stay there. It's not that at all, right? It's a touching in. I see you. I feel it's creating a space. I see that you're there, right? And then over time, we can be with a little more, and have some more compassion for it, right? Instead of holding it all at arm's length. That's what I did at first, right? It's like, okay, I see you, stay over there, right? Actually, in mindful self-compassion training, there's this this lovely kind of analogy where a feeling comes knocking on the front door of your house. Boom, 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 you know? It's like fear or something. And you look through the peephole and it's like, ah! No, I'm not going to open the door, right? And the fear is out there, but I'm afraid, right? Let me in. And so eventually, you know, you just open the door and it's like, okay, sit here, right? There's a chair in the foyer here. Just don't bother me, right? And then eventually you say, okay, you can wander around in the house. And then ultimately you invite them into the living room or the family room, sit down on the couch with them and say, hello, fear. Tell me, you know, what are you afraid of? I'm here. So we develop that, but little by little, right? We develop that competence in doing that. Thank you for that. Any other comments, questions? Yeah. Can we bring it up? Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. I so appreciated the poem that you read by Rumi, and what you were just saying. I don't know if this is like from the canon or what, but once in a Dharma talk, I heard a very similar story actually from the Buddha that, you know, Maras or demons would visit him and he would welcome them in. And I found that the whole imagery of welcoming these, whatever we want to call them, feelings, dreads, demons, as visitors, because to me, that reminds me that they're visitors and they're passing through, and that helps with the non-attachment. So thank you for that reminder this evening.
Yeah. Don't you love that? The turning the words into verbs rather than nouns, right? When they're nouns, they're here to stay. When they're verbs, that ing ending, right? They're visiting, right? And so they don't get stuck that way, right? Yeah, thank you. Behind you, yeah?
I just had a comment to piggyback off of your comment, because I think what I've learned during the practice is like the layering of emotions, and I've really appreciated the ability to sit with stillness and realize that sometimes when I'm feeling something, to turn into it because there's a chance to like find the other like layers. And so something at face value isn't always it. Like I've found always sometimes like with the anger underneath it is the fear, or like the dread with the sadness, and that there's just so many layers to it, and being able to sit with it allows me to kind of uncover those and then process them, right? Like you felt the release, it sounded like, and that feels really good, because I think that's like part of the experience, is being able to also release that emotion, and so it doesn't like stick with us in our body.
Yeah, I love that, right? Because there are so oftentimes so many layers. I mean, a lot of times underneath anger is fear and there's sadness, right? And to be able to uncover that and to be with that, all of them with some compassion in itself can help release, because those feelings are no longer feeling alone and abandoned and exiled, you know? just the loving kindness, the presence turning towards can really help to release some of that. Thank you. Well, we have come to the end of our time, so I just want to thank you and dedicate the merit of our practice. May our practice help us to become more equanimous and to feel the gentle rolling of the ups and downs, right, as we try to widen that window of well-being and just really be here for whatever is with our in our own lives and the lives of others, and just bring more peace and kindness and compassion into life. And the world really needs that. So thank you very much. And I will be here for a few more minutes. If there's anything that you wanted to talk to me about, feel free to do that. So thank you.